Metformin was just starting to become the standard of care for weight gain on antipsychotics. And then the FDA started recalling it. What's happening and how do you advise your patients? Welcome to the Carlette Psychiatry Podcast, keeping psychiatry honest since 2003.
I'm Chris Aiken, the editor-in-chief of the Carlette Psychiatry Report.
And I'm Kelly Newsom, a psychiatric NP and a dedicated reader of every issue. It started in 2018 with a blood pressure medication, Valsartan. Scientists at an online pharmacy were screening products for potential carcinogens when they saw an alarming peak in a probable carcinogen, N-nitrosodimethylamine, NDMA levels. Valsartan was recalled in July of 2018, and it was followed by the recalls of five other NDMA-contaminated medications. November 2018. The angiotensin II receptor blockers, irbesartan and losartan. September 2019 and January 2020, the over-the-counter reflux medicines, ranitidine and nizatidine. Those recalls started hitting closer to home between May and October 2020, when the FDA recalled 179 batches of metformin ER. So what is NDMA?
First, what it's not. NDMA is not NMDA. NMDA is well known in psychiatry as the glutamatergic receptor involved in the mechanisms of medications that antagonize the NMDA receptor. Things like ketamine and lamotrigine, experimental antidepressants like amantadine, riluzole, memantine, dextromethorphan, and drugs of abuse like PCP, alcohol, and two that have both therapeutic properties and abuse potential, MDMA and ketamine. These all have to do with NMDA, which has nothing to do with NDMA. These drugs reduce the effects of excess glutamate, which is toxic. A little bit of glutamate in the brain is good, but too much is toxic. Back to NDMA.
Which is also toxic, but in a different way. It's a carcinogen that causes mutations in DNA, and it is directly damaging to the liver. Even small amounts are deadly, and there have been several prominent homicides where NDMA was used as a poison, resulting in death through hepatotoxicity. On the other hand, NDMA is everywhere. It's a byproduct of wastewater treatment with chlorine. And that water flows through our taps and into the soil where the NDMA collects in the plants and vegetables that we eat.
NDMA is also one of the reasons that we're warned against eating grilled and charred meats. It's one of those cancer-causing nitrosamines that forms when meat is grilled or smoked. It's particularly high in smoked sausages. Nitrosamines are also found in beers, cheeses, sausages, bacon, and foods that are smoked or pickled in salt.
So how much NDMA are these recalled medications producing? With ranitidine, NDMA levels rose ninefold higher than the upper safety level for medications. But that safety level, which the FDA set for medication, seems very conservative, 0.096 micrograms per day. The typical diet has about twice as much NDMA, and if you're drinking a lot of alcohol or eating smoked meats, your typical diet will have a lot more NDMA in it. Part of the reason this safety limit is set so low is that the FDA assumes that the NDMA for medications is on top of the NDMA already present in our daily foods. A pound of steak has three times as much NDMA as the upper safety limit for medications. But what really matters is cancer. There, the FDA has given us some data on the first recalled medication, Valsartan. If 8,000 people took Valsartan at the maximum dose for 4 years while the drug was contaminated, there would be one additional case of cancer.
And remember, that's at the max dose, which is important because in psychiatry, we certainly don't use the max dose of metformin. We don't have numbers like that for metformin yet, so that 1 in 8,000 number might be slightly reassuring, but when we're talking about things like cancer and liver damage, it's not exactly reassuring. And we still don't know the cause of all this NDMA contamination. The best guess is that it's a byproduct of the manufacturing process. But the problem points toward a troubling trend in drug quality As manufacturing has shifted overseas in the past two decades, we are seeing more problems with medications. Right now, about 40% of medications in the U.S. are manufactured overseas. And even when they are produced in the U.S., around 80% of the ingredients come from abroad. So what's wrong with going overseas? Well, historically, the U.S. has had the tightest regulatory control of manufacturing safety in medications. The FDA has been the gold standard, but it's difficult for the FDA to regulate overseas manufacturing because they can't do what they do best, surprise visits. To get into another country, they have to work through governmental agencies and plan their trips to arrange these inspections, and that allows the drug companies precious time to prepare for the inspectors. Most of the problems have come from manufacturers in India and China. And if you're interested in this, Catherine Eben has detailed all the gory details in a best-selling book, Bottle of Lies. We're going to be interviewing her sometime next month. The original Valsartan contamination came from a Chinese firm, Zhuizhang Huaya. This firm changed their manufacturing process in 2011, and they were supposed to announce that to the FDA, because it can create byproducts and things that might be damaging and would require a new inspection. But against regulations, they did not announce the change in manufacturing, and that's what led to all the NDMA in Valsartan.
Back to metformin. Our November-December issue has an article that tells you how to figure out whether your patient's metformin has been contaminated by NDMA and what to do about it. The situation was alarming to us as the number of contaminated metformin batches kept growing, and we worried that it was only a matter of time before they were all tested and all found to be contaminated. But there is some reassurance there. The FDA did test some batches that are clean, and we have guidance on how to find those batches in the article. So metformin is used for diabetes and polycystic ovarian disease, but why do we use it in psychiatry?
In psychiatry, we use metformin to prevent weight gain on antipsychotics. It's the best studied antidote for that side effect. Recently, the American Psychiatric Association recommended it first line in their 2020 treatment guidelines for antipsychotics and schizophrenia. And there are a dozen randomized controlled trials that have found that metformin reduces antipsychotic-associated weight gain by about 7 pounds on average. And the benefit here is not just cosmetic. Metformin lowers the risk of diabetes in people taking antipsychotics because it reduces insulin resistance. It also reduces cholesterol and triglyceride levels on antipsychotics. And here's a surprise, it even prevents prolactin elevations on antipsychotics. And high prolactin levels can lead to problems like sexual dysfunction, breast milk secretion, raise the cancer risk, and cause osteopenia. Here's a tip about dosing metformin. Don't wait until the antipsychotic weight gain gets out of control before starting it. Metformin works best when started early, particularly with high weight-gaining medications like olanzapine and clozapine, where it can be started soon after the antipsychotic is initiated. Metformin may also have direct benefits on the brain. When used for traditional medical purposes like diabetes and polycystic ovarian disease, controlled trials have found that metformin reduces depression. And there's a recent randomized controlled trial where it treated depression in people without diabetes, when it was added to an antidepressant. The typical dose is around 1,000 milligrams a day. It can be taken with food to prevent nausea, and you can start with 500 milligrams a day.
So how should patients substitute if their medication is recalled or if they don't want to risk it?
Some of these NDMA-contaminated meds are completely recalled. You can't get them at all, like the reflux medicines. But metformin is still available. For the reflux medications ranitidine and nizitidine, there are alternatives that have been tested and are free of NDMA. Those are famotidine, Pepcid, cimetidine, Tagamet, esomeprazole, Nexium, lansoprazole, Prevacid, and omeprazole, Prilosec. But the last three, the oprazoles, are all proton pump inhibitors, And I should warn you that they're on the list of top 5 medications to deprescribe because they have a lot of risks of their own, including osteopenia, early death, and cancer. Now, for metformin, there isn't an exact substitute, but liraglutide, which is used for diabetes and weight loss, has a promising study for antipsychotic weight gain. It's just one study, but it is randomized controlled. Liraglutide also has direct brain benefits that are being explored right now. It seems to protect brain cells, it's neuroprotective, and it increases sensitivity to insulin in the brain. It turns out that insulin is not just involved in metabolizing glucose, it's also involved in some important brain functions like memory and cognition, and we're going to explore that more in an upcoming interview.
And now for the word of the day, alexithymia.
Alexithymia is not an Amazon device. It's a personal trait characterized by the inability to identify and describe emotions experienced inside yourself or in others. Alexithymia is not a diagnosis, but it's a trait, and it's found in many disorders, most notably antisocial personality disorder, people with substance abuse, and people with autism. Last week, we defined a similar term, dysymboli, which refers to difficulty that people with schizophrenia have in describing their inner experiences. So what's the difference between alexithymia and dysymboli? The difference is really one of degree. Dysymboli is more of a psychotic level of detachment from the self. It is part of what makes it hard to understand the experience of a person with schizophrenia. In alexithymia, it's not quite psychotic. The person appears to be having normal human emotions like anxiety, but they just seem unable to talk about their feelings or even to simply name them. But they can otherwise talk about personal events in their lives, and they still appear to act on their feelings in the ways that most people would, although they might act in more extreme ways, like turning to addictions and substance abuse or even violence, and that might be because they have difficulty metabolizing and understanding their feelings.
Do you try to add psychotherapy to your medication visits? Then we have a holiday treat for you. This winter, we're featuring interviews on how to weave therapy into the medication visit, starting next with a conversation with Michael Poshtonak.
You can read the full articles and earn CME credits at thecarlattreport.com and even get your MOC board certification credits. There we have a special offer for podcast listeners. You get $30 off your first year's subscription with the promo code PODCAST.
If you like this podcast, share it with a friend and rate us on your podcast store. It's easy. You just press one of them stars. Or maybe five of them.